Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Redemption by Jessica Rubin. Narrated by Troy Duran and C.J. Bloom. Chapter 1. Vincent. Beads of sweat trickled down my chest and onto my abs within mere moments of stepping onto the great concrete. Squinting my eyes from the blaring sun, I crack my neck from side to side, letting out tension as my eyes take in the huge cement blocks around me. Me and Tom, my best friend and brother in the Borgnone Mafia, are personally escorted off the prison grounds, our heavy strides silent against the dark pavement as we walk to our freedom. The warden and two highly armed officers flank our sides. A throat clears as a lone black Mercedes-Benz pulls up to the tall gates. Tom turns to me, smirking like a beefed-up demon as his green eyes twinkle with triumph. Prison did nothing but make my boy tougher both inside and out. The guards step back. Tom swiftly opens the door, bending his thick neck low and entering the car. I move to face the straight-backed warden, his bald head perspiring from the sun. He takes my hand in a firm shake. "I won't forget what you did for me, sir. Thank you." I feel nothing short of honest gratitude. If not for the warden, I'd be leaving as nothing but an ex-con. Instead, I'm heading out of here as the board president of what will be one of the largest gaming companies in the USA. "No doubt, son. You're one of the good ones. I hope to never see you again," he chuckles, his timbre gravelly and strong as his hand continues to grip mine. I finally let go and step into the car, shutting the door firmly behind me. It closes with a satisfying slam. I'm free. Sort of. It's been 6 years, 3 months, and 2 days. My sentence lessened due to good behavior. And now I've got 6 months on parole before I can leave New York behind me. For good. The driver starts down the dirt road wordlessly, his orders likely already given by my father, Antonio Borgnone, the boss of the Borgnone Mafia. Tom and I face away from each other, staring out our respective tinted windows. Boxy white mobile homes come into view as my eyes slightly water from the smell of fresh leather seats. It's that new car scent everyone loves, but always bothered me with its sharpness. Green trees enter my vision next, and the unexpected burst of color has my eyes widening. Prison is all grays and blacks, all the time. Absent-mindedly, I rub the center of my chest as an acute feeling of worry seeps inside, blocking the relief I felt only moments before. What if a cop pulls us over and says there was an error with my paperwork during discharge? There are rumors that a misplaced signature can get a person back inside on the quick. I shake out my shoulders, telling my consciousness to shut the fuck up. It's not like me to double and triple guess myself like this. But what can I expect after being locked up for over half a decade? Freedom is here, yet I have this sinking feeling someone is going to take it away from me. Being locked up is hell, although I know I deserve the punishment. I made wrong choices, which led me to ruin my world along with both Eve's and Tom's. I was an impulsive and hot-headed kid, believing I could have my girl in secret while publicly dating a socialite for the family. But this compartmentalized life brought me nothing but divide. Unable to get a good grip on the world around me, my life fell apart. I've had years now to go over my mistakes, and now that I'm free, it's time I redeem myself. Once, being the son of Antonio Borgnone defined me, but now I understand I'm my own man. What I do is on me, and me alone. The low growl of motorcycles ring in my ears. I've got to get myself a ride. Considering the fact that I've spent years caged like an animal behind steel and metal bars, the idea of being free on the road without the restriction of a roof and doors sounds incredible. The car begins to shake as a swarm of bikes surround us. My body and mind switch to alert mode. I look left to right, forward and back. Four motorcycles are on either side of the vehicle, plus two in front and two behind. They're wearing leather vests but moving too quickly for me to identify the insignia on the back. One of the bikers pulls dangerously close to our car. He turns his head as a dark grin spreads across his face, raising a hand in what looks like solidarity. My pulse quickens. I finally get a good look at his leather. This is the outside arm of the Boss Brotherhood, also known as the BB. They're a group of white supremacist bikers with nothing but stupidity, muscles, and drugs between them. The fact that they work with the family is the tip of the iceberg when it comes to what I see as the degradation of the Borinoni Mafia. It's a downward spiral I'm not interested in taking part in. Not anymore. And if I get my way, I won't have to any longer. Holy fuck, man. This is insane. Enemies inside, friends outside. Tom's voice has a hard and confused edge. We both knew the family aligned with the BB, but still, seeing it in real time is a new thing entirely. Christ, I mumble, fantasizing about opening the window and grabbing the fucker's throat. I clench my fists but lean back. Sit, brother. We're not packing, and I'm not getting us back inside within 20 minutes of leaving. They aren't showing aggression, and we have no reason to fight. Fuck! Tom slams his fist into the empty seat in front of him. He presses his lips together in a thin line, his tell for when he's calming himself. You're right, he replies after a few beats, his voice resigned. Finally, the bikes take off, leaving us unharmed. Tom leans forward and touches the back of the seat in front of me, getting the driver's attention. Stop at a restaurant, man. We're starved. I nod. Good call. The thought of food has my stomach grumbling. 30 minutes later, we pull up to what looks like a 1950s-style diner. The structure is low and white, with two rows of pink neon lights highlighting the roof. I strut inside, the door chiming with our entry. It's strange walking into a restaurant as if I were just a typical law-abiding citizen, when just an hour ago I had cuffs around my wrists. Yet, here I am. Tom follows me to the back corner booth where two oversized white menus are already placed on the table, along with silverware and a red and white checkered napkin. I've got a good spot, able to watch the entire diner as well as keep an eye on the parking lot. Can never be too careful. I sit down and scan the food choices, letting my eyes ping-pong between appetizers, main courses, and desserts. In prison, we had no choice when it came to food. Hell, we barely had a choice when it came to anything. I'm staring at over 50 potential meal items, and the list seems endless. Frustrated, I drop the menu back on the table, noticing an overweight trucker sitting alone in the booth in front of ours. His red face shows a tired contentment as he digs into a huge slice of apple pie with a dull silver spoon. My mouth waters. We did it, huh? Tom's voice brings my attention back to him. There were moments, I swear to God, Vincent, I thought time would never pass. He admits. We were lucky, though. True, he nods his buzzed head in agreement. Our prison stay wasn't as difficult as it is for most inmates. For one thing, the skill sets we were raised on easily translated into prison culture. Mental toughness, physical strength, and ability to lead. We also had a pre-existing structure within the system to plug into, as 7 of our boys were already doing time. The waitress steps over to take our orders, a pink apron tied around her short white uniform. She's young, with bleached blonde hair. I cringe, remembering the girl who Eve believes I was with in our bedroom that fateful night. Goddamn, but the memory of watching her heartbreak in front of my eyes still burns. Mouth-watering in excitement, the waitress stares at Tom as if she just hit the jackpot. His eyes rove over her body hungrily, like an animal starved. Not that I blame him. It's been a long time. I clear my throat and the waitress turns to me. I order a double cheeseburger, fries, and a Coke with extra ice. Apple pie, the same one as the guy in front of me, for dessert. Instead of writing down my order, the girl's gaping at me, frozen to the spot. I look at her notepad, then her eyes, silently telling her to get her ass into gear. She swallows, pupils dilating before finally jotting down my order. She's attracted, but also scared. I'll have the same, Tom tells her with a crooked smile, causing her to erupt in a nervous giggle.
I'll go get you guys your order.
She scuttles away with a bright red face, and I shake my head at Tom. Not even a minute, huh? I'm just glad to see I've still got it, he laughs. I know what I'm doing tonight, and it isn't jacking off like I've been doing for almost 7 years. The first thing I want to do after this meal, of course, is fuck my brains out. He grabs the edge of the table and pitches forward to get closer to me. You think the waitress would take a 5-minute break to suck me off in the bathroom? After the burger? 5 minutes? I'd put you at 30 seconds. He happily shrugs his shoulders. What about you? I'm sure she'd do us both. Although you might be too much for her. Yeah, you're right. My 10-inch dick would definitely scare her. I quirk my mouth in a half-smile and Tom laughs out loud. Man, he says, shaking his head from side to side. She took one look at you and almost pissed herself. You got a bad case of resting murder face. As scary as you looked before. You're worse now, he laughs. Those Indian black eyes of yours. Shit. Native American, you fuckhead. I casually shrug at the dig, but he isn't wrong. I'm bigger and harder than ever. We both are. Not my type anyway, I reply, leaning back in the booth and crossing my arms over my chest. It's been a while since I've sat without guards watching my every move, and the independence is shockingly unnerving. I won't say that bitch's name, because it makes me sick what she did to us. But tell me you aren't still thinking about her after all these years. I immediately sit up, gripping the edge of the table. I may be leaving the life, but if I ever hear you talk about her like that again, I'll kill you. I told you before we were locked up, and I'll remind you again now that we're out. She didn't do shit. I made choices. I point at my chest with my thumb. I did those wrongs. What happened to me and you is all on me. He leans closer. Man, this is why you're supposed to be the boss. His voice is a conspiring whisper. It's in your blood. Don't walk away from it, Vincent. You take responsibility for yourself. We both know if the tables were turned, I would have said the girl had you whipped. But you? I love you like a brother, but I'm not on board with the new direction the family's rolling in. I shake my head slowly from side to side. Just can't do it anymore. Your dad is gonna freak the fuck out. I mean, he exhales. Maybe you want to wear a Kevlar before you have your chat. It's spoken in jest, but I can tell Tom is worried. While we've discussed my plans about leaving the family for good, my father doesn't know about my decision yet. Tom's chosen to stay inside the fold, unable to see anything in his future outside of the family. If anything, prison solidified his loyalty. Still, we've lived our lives side by side since we were born. Leaving prison together was a given. The family made sure of it. While we'd never admit it to each other, parting ways is unsettling. Still, it's just the way life goes. I know the conversation with my father won't be easy, but truth? I'd rather die than keep this shit up, and I've spent years now coming to terms with it. The waitress walked back to the table with large white plates of food. The moment I see the juicy burger sitting between a toasted sesame seed bun, every thought previously in my head disappears. I take a huge bite and groan. Neither of us speaks until our plates are completely clean. Dessert is more of the same, not so much as shifting until every crumb is transferred into our mouths and rinsed down with gigantic ice-cold sodas. The car pulls up to Park Avenue and 75th Street. Wish it weren't this way, brother. Tom puts out his fist and I knock mine against his. He opens the door and steps out. The driver continues uptown, taking me directly to my father's townhouse. My right leg bounces up and down as we swerve through city traffic. Sir, do you mind if I take 1st Avenue? My GPS is telling me there's an accident on Park. No problem, I reply, noticing the super high-tech screen planted on his dashboard. God damn, a lot changed while I was locked up. The car turns east before taking a left on 1st. I squint my eyes in confusion, seeing designated bike lanes running up the street. The mayor must be insane to do this. I can only imagine the potential for accidents. Turning west, we drive up 92nd Street, pulling over between Madison and Park. I thank the driver politely as I open the door. Stepping out of the car, I stand tall and inhale the city air. It isn't fresh or clean, but it's free. My eyes examine the block as the clouds overhead cast a dull gray tinge on the row of brick and limestone townhouses. Three black SUVs sit idly, double-parked along the quiet tree-lined street. Turning toward my father's townhouse, the home I grew up in. I count 10 security cameras framing the mansion's entrance. 5 more than before I went into lockup. It still looks like an embassy opposed to a personal residence. I can just imagine him now, watching me like a hawk from the 5th-story window while he smokes cigarette after cigarette, stewing. The car drives away and I feel a surge of heat rush over my body. With a rolling stomach, sweat breaks out on my forehead. I slick my short hair away from my face, feeling dampness at the roots. It must be stress. The combination of leaving lockup, entering this house, and the looming talk about leaving the family is giving me an emotional reaction. Fuck, I've got to get a grip. I inhale through my mouth and exhale through my nose as I walk up the wide steps to the front door, imagining myself setting fire to this entire place and burning it to the ground. Still, I've got no choice but to deal with what's ahead. I move to ring the bell, but the door swings open before I make contact. Vincent! My father pulls me into the house before getting to the doorway, eyes scanning the street. Seemingly satisfied there's no one watching, he moves back inside and shuts the door. The crystal chandelier hanging above our heads sways from the force. Gripping my shoulders, he apprises me. His hands dig into my biceps as if to incapacitate. I could easily get out of his grip. Yet, I stand still, not wanting to aggravate him. In the last few years, he's become increasingly more paranoid. I need to do my best to keep him calm, especially today. With a man like my father, the less I say, the better. Finally, he lets me go. "Come with me," his voice is stern. "Lots to go over." I don't reply. I was never much of a talker, but my solitary demeanor only increased with time and circumstances. With heavy steps, I follow him up the red-carpeted staircase. I crack my knuckles, noticing the place hasn't changed at all, still showy and ornate like an Italian palace. We enter the white marble kitchen on the 2nd floor and my eyes zero in on the surface of the dining table, filled with files. "All for me?" His electric blue eyes shine. The idea that my casino and hotel complex is close to completion and all the money that'll be rolling in excites him to no end. Still, seeing all my hard work in front of me like this is straight up astounding. It was dirty business getting the tribal council on board to partner with me. But when one of the older board members died, there was a perfect spot open for the taking. The family managed to pressure them to grant me a seat within a year of my going to prison, with less bloodshed than we initially thought. Once that bridge was crossed, I let the council know of my intention to start a gaming operation. Luckily, with a few well-placed and heavy bribes, my current predicament of being in prison while creating a gaming operation was dropped into the basket of sovereign immunity under the tribal nation. I studied everything about building and development. Internet access could have been an issue, but my attorney had it worked out that the warden himself would monitor my emails. With nothing to hide, having him look through my electronic correspondence was the least of my worries. Every single detail of this business had to be perfectly constructed. And it is. I won't allow ignorance of any laws getting between me and my goals. Negotiating with the builders and architects was difficult, considering the circumstances, but I managed. People came to the prison weekly, and meetings were held on bolted-down plastic tables in the far corner of the cafeteria. Deals were brokered, and slowly, I built a team of trustworthy and hardworking professionals. Concurrently, my lawyers worked on my behalf to obtain all construction and building permits, approvals, and bank loans. The tribal council came to me on the first Monday of every other month, flying across the country so we could work in tandem. It started out as an angry and awkward partnership due to the fact that Borgnoni muscle was used to force me at their table. But it didn't take long for them to realize I wasn't there to screw them over. I took my birthright seriously and expected the milestone to advance and better the tribe's day-to-day lives. I made sure the council understood that. As the work took shape, the parts within me that were disjointed pulled together. The creativity, the business acumen, all my studies in school, street smarts, negotiation. My days of fragmentation were over, and I'm proud as hell of what I've accomplished. Taking our respective seats across from each other, I stare at the light shining off the corner facets of the crystal and glass dining table. My mind wanders into an idea for the front desk in the main hotel's lobby. My father shuffles in his chair. I set up a work area in your bedroom. Monitors with large screens have been outfitted. Tomorrow morning I'll move to my own place. No way in hell I'd stay here willingly. A few weeks ago I had my lawyer set up a rental for me in Midtown. The lease begins tomorrow. What's wrong with this fucking house? His voice is aggressive as he stares me down. I squint my eyes, taking note of his overly exaggerated response. I just want my space. My voice is calm, meant to take the situation down a notch. He hands me a file with hostility. I force my hands to steady as I open it. It's the descriptions and numbers for the gaming floors, which I spent years meticulously planning out. 5,000 slot machines, 250 table games, as well as a race book. I clear my throat, switching my gear to work mode. Economically, we should be able to employ roughly 7,000 locals. I've done the math. We'll have about $1.3 billion in revenue per year. Concerts and boxing events will also bring in further employment and money. Excellent, his voice is enthusiastic. I think the more locals we employ, the better the goodwill with the state. A lot of people will move here specifically for the casino and hotel management positions. I've been toying with the idea of subsidized housing for the employees who live off the res. We have a great team in place, so building that out shouldn't be complicated. He looks at me in annoyed confusion. Why not just build out a few apartment complexes and let the workers rent directly from us? Why should I spend my money helping the damn employees? He scoffs. I hesitate, not wanting to anger him, but still needing to get my point across. That idea may mean more money in the short term, but I think throwing a bone to the workers is smarter. For one, we'll have higher caliber employees to choose from during hiring, because working here will be more desirable. Cheaper housing is obviously a real benefit. And it would mean better employee retention. People won't want to leave their jobs when they've got a solid and cheap place to live and a short commute. My father looks pointedly over my shoulder and I turn my head, following his gaze. An entire spread of food sits on the white marble kitchen island. I stand and walk over, noticing it's from Pastrami Queen, my favorite deli in New York City. I was wondering when you'd realize I put food out for you. I'm not a total fuck, you know, he grunts. I bristle, because that's exactly what he's become. Letting my eyes take in what's before me, there are overstuffed turkey and roast beef sandwiches, a mountain of fries, and three variations of their famous meat-stuffed knishes. Shit, he remembered the fried onion. A bunch of Diet Cokes sit in a bucket of ice. Even though I already ate, the growling in my stomach starts up again. Grabbing a glass plate full of food and a cold can of soda, I settle back to the table. Before I take a bite, I notice how quiet it is. I haven't heard this kind of silence in years. Vincent, he sits up. I know you're itching to get out of the city to run the business, but never forget where everything comes from. Carefully folding his hands together, he rests them on the table. The money. The ability to start up. You want to take the family into billions territory? Trust me, no one is complaining. But when we call on you to come back, you better run home. You're still my... I lift my right hand in the air, stopping him. I was going to wait to discuss this with you, but I guess now you've brought it up, then here we go. Once I'm out west, I'll take a decent cut and make sure to clean all the family money. I'll manage the milestone to the best of my ability to make you rich. But the answer is a straight no about coming back to New York and sitting at the table. He stares at me in disbelief.
The fuck you talking about? You don't go against my rule. I don't give a shit how angry you are about the BB working with us. You don't get to just wait.
I'm not sitting here as your right hand, I tell him straight. The family's changed since I went into lockup, and what's going on now isn't okay with me. Turning my head toward the window, I notice a new large fountain installed. Two huge pink and white marble angels embrace while water spills from their lips. Grimacing from the utter excess, I shake my head. He slams his hand down on the table to get my attention, but I barely flinch.
You owe me your life, son. In more ways than you can fucking count. I groomed you for this role.
He bares his teeth.
You don't get to just choose. You are the prince of this operation. Everyone knows who you are, especially after prison. Your days of hiding in school, not being marked, that's what's over, he huffs, pointing his finger at me. You're home, and you belong to me.
He punctuates every word like a final decree. You can't control me, I steadily reply, maintaining a clear thought process. I'm in the middle of building one of the largest casino complexes on the West Coast. No one else in the family has the aptitude for it. You want the money I'll bring in? You want a spot for your dirty cash? I'm your best option. Hell, I'm your only option, I reply in all honesty. But the only way I'm doing this is if I take a step back and become a business partner with no other family ties. Otherwise, end my life. But good luck running the milestone without me. He balls his hand into fists.
You think you're the boss of me, making fucking choices? You think you can tell me what to do?
His face turns redder by the second.
I groomed you for this, Vincent. I made you.
You're working with untrustworthy lunatics. They're dirty. I told you that day in prison, I'll never work alongside the boss brotherhood, I growl. He starts to laugh maniacally.
You'll regret this decision.
His voice turns so low, I have to strain my ears to hear.
No one, and I mean no one, says no to Antonio Borignoni.
The words "or else" are unspoken, but dangle in the air like sharpened knives. My chair grates against the floor as I stand. Walking over to the sink, I drop my plate inside before turning to walk away.
Vincent!
He calls out. I stop in my tracks.
You will not escape your destiny. I choose who comes and who goes. Who will live and who will die? Me.
His jaw is clenched. I shake my head at him. I'd rather get taken in a body bag than live this life anymore. What you stand for won't be my way. I'm back, but I'm not the man I used to be. I won't eat your shit just because you plated it. I pause to gauge his reaction. His darkened eyes are trained on me. I will continue to sit as the president of the Milestone as a business partner to you. Only. No more family connection. I'm out.
His face breaks into a liquid, slow smile full of threat.
I choose to ignore it, turning away and leaving the kitchen to walk up another 2 flights to my old bedroom. Truth? I'm not afraid. I know my father loves money above all things. If for no other reason than to keep the cash coming in, he'll keep me alive. He's angry now, but as he gets richer, he'll calm down. The amount of energy coursing through me is off the charts. I need to run. I open my bedroom door, pausing in the doorway. Peeking my head inside like an intruder, I note everything's the same. Still, it feels like another man's space. And metaphorically, it is. My ornately carved wooden four-poster bed sits in the center of the room, covered in tightly tucked-in navy sheets. The red and blue Persian rug that Enzo bought for my 16th birthday covers the floor. A large antique bureau sits on the right corner by the window. On the opposite corner is a full computer system, just like he said. I hesitantly step into the room and open my drawers to find fresh clothes. Pulling out a pair of black jersey shorts and a t-shirt, I press my nose to the small pile in my hands, shutting my eyes to take a deep inhale. The smell of fresh clothes? Heaven. Quickly changing, I run down to the windowless basement gym and alternate between running and lifting weights until I'm drained. Dragging myself back upstairs, I tear off my sweat-drenched clothes and drop them in a pile on the bathroom floor, before realizing the housekeeper must have come up while I was working out. 4 fresh towels sit beside the marble sink. I make a mental note to thank whoever's doing the cleaning. Eagerly, I turn on the shower, fixing the dial so the water is hot. Before stepping in, I take a look in the mirror. It's been a while since I've really seen myself. My 6'2" frame is wider now. 2 hours a day of working out has its benefits. I'm solid muscle, more so than ever before. My 6-pack has turned into an 8. My right arm is inked with the Borignone Mafia insignia, Eve's name etched within the tribal design.
I'll turn this tad into something else. A sleeve, maybe. I glance down at my hip, touching...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?